Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Mark Bocuzzi, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's new with you?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, in a little bit, Mark Bocuzzi will be joining us. Unfortunately, Julie Beischel is under the weather and ailing, and we wish her a speedy recovery. But co-founder Mark will be joining us, and he's fascinating in and of himself, so we look forward to that. So I'm looking across the desk, and I see you have an article there relating to that horrible plane crash, the latest one, the Malaysian plane crash.
You know what? Oddly enough, I don't think it's the latest one.
Oh, it's
I
not?
Think there was another one after that. But this is the second of the two Malaysian planes that went down. And what's interesting about this is that one of the victims who was on the plane had a premonition of the plane going down, of there being a crash. And his mom described him, this is, of course, after the fact, he had been oddly agitated for days, peppering her with questions about death, about his soul, and about God. And the next morning, she dropped this son, Miguel, and his big brother, Shaka, at the airport so they could catch this Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 on their journey back to Bali to visit their grandmother. And there were just a series of constant questions about his own mortality and about life and about death. And in fact, as they got to the airport, they were outside customs. The boys hugged their mom goodbye, walked towards the passport counter, and Miguel whirled around, ran back to his mom, threw his arms around her, and said, "Mama, I'm going to miss you. What will happen if the airplane crashes?" So that just moments before he got on the plane. So that says a lot. I mean, I don't want to say it's very frequent, but it is often that we hear from the surviving family of children who had some inkling about their imminent death.
Well, it's not only from children. I mean, every time there's a major disaster, reports start filtering through, either from people that survived the disaster or from the relatives of people that perished. And it's not uncommon. You know, people have dreams, you know, precognitive dreams. People have a feeling that they can't put their finger on, but they know that something's not right. Now, you know, with this story with the child, you could say, well, it's natural for somebody to have some fear of flying, but that doesn't seem to be the case because he was not only talking about the plane crashing, but as you mentioned, all of these queries about what happens.
Right, and he was so unnerved that the older brother reassured the mom and said, "You know, don't worry, I will take care of both of us."
Yeah,
you know, so obviously the older child had no sense of this crash. Only the younger child did.
Yeah, and it raises an interesting question. So, he's a child, but many times adults have the same experience. And then what do you do about it? I mean, is it powerful enough to make you change your plans? Do you act? You know, do you act upon it? Obviously, these plans were set. The child couldn't, unless he could convince his mother otherwise. You know, so I think people always have that that dilemma. They receive information, and you just don't know how far to take it because you question yourself: was it just my imagination? Is this really true? Could it really happen? You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, like many. I should say, by average families today, they would just shrug it off. They'd say, oh, it's just fear. It's watching too much TV. It's what you see, you know. But I think in the membership of our foundation, I think if somebody were to say that to one of our members, they would probably take it seriously and say, okay, not getting on this plane.
Yeah, I know. We certainly did. You know, I mean, I've learned to follow your intuition, and we have changed plans based upon these precognitive dreams that you've had. But I think that many people, as you've mentioned, if you're already familiar with this stuff and you know that there's research that shows that these things are real, you're more apt to change your plans than somebody in the general public who so-called doesn't believe in any of this stuff, you know. So,
right.
So we just came back from two events. We had in Connecticut. Well, one was in Connecticut. We had a grief retreat, and this year we added something new to the program. We added a presentation for the bereaved people in attendance about afterlife. Research and about scientific research, and we were wondering if that would be beneficial, and I think it was. I mean, some people are convinced by these anecdotal reports and personal experiences, and others need the scientific piece of it, and I think it was a good meld.
I agree that it was a necessity, because people who don't have that inner sense of there being an afterlife, or a place where they're going to be reunited with their deceased loved ones. Like you said, they can only go on anecdotal stories they hear from other people, or even their own experiences that they have had. But that kind of wears off, because the culture around us keeps telling us can't be, can't be, can't be, so they start doubting it. But I think when Dr. Parisetti gave them scientific evidence, that's something they could take home. That's something that they can look back on and say, okay, it wasn't my imagination. Look how many other people have this. And those are wonderful things for somebody in grief to take away with.
Yeah, and then we were fortunate, lose track of days. Was it yesterday or Tuesday? We had a lecture and a mediumship demonstration, also by Dr. Parisetti and a medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. And it was a two-hour scientific lecture, and we had over 200 people there. And what was your sense of the breakdown? In other words, why people came? Would you say that what percentage of the people that came, if you had a guess, were just simply curious, because
observations from the actual data that we collected when people were signing up and when people were coming to the door. We seem to have an unprecedented number of men coming to this, which usually there's always more women than men at these events.
You're right.
And I would say we may have very well tipped the scales where we had more men there than women.
It's true. You think it was because it was a lecture about the science?
Right, yeah. Right. Because the men would never want to admit, or most men would never want to admit that, you know, they're even pondering something that's paranormal. Whereas women are very open to it. I think it has to do with their makeup and their senses that they have.
So it forms a foundation. So some people say, okay, so there's science behind it, so I can accept it now.
Right, right. And that's exactly what they were looking for. They're saying, even if, for instance, okay, so the wife is involved in all of this stuff, Maybe she's reading a lot of paranormal books. Maybe she goes to a medium, and the guy's always looking at her and saying, okay, but, and shaking his head. This was his opportunity to go with her. She was going to see the medium and experience the scientific evidence. He was going for the scientific evidence. And what I thought was also interesting about the evening, not one single person left the room while Dr. Parisetti was speaking, not to go to the bathroom, not to get a drink, not for anything.
Yeah.
And yet we had a set intermission. They knew that there was going to be a break. Nobody left the room.
Yeah,
when they came out, they all flew to go pick up his programs.
Yeah, I think I was watching the audience as he was lecturing, and they really had their attention. So it was a good event, and we look forward not only to having more of these, but to have in the future webinars where people don't have to physically be there, and we can hold such events. So stay tuned for that. So we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about things we can't see, the unseen world, from our guest, Mark Bacuzzi. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Mark Boccuzzi. Our sponsor is Star Seed Gems, and they can be found at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And Mark Boccuzzi is co-founder and researcher and director of operations at the Winbridge Institute. Mark holds a BS in computer science. He had a minor in broadcast communications. He spent more than a decade investigating spontaneous cases of apparitions and related haunting phenomena in the San Francisco Bay Area and southern Arizona. He's an associate member of the Parapsychological Association and a full member of the Society for Scientific Exploration. His Mark's research interests include, among other things, intuition, animal psi, applied psychokinesis, photographic anomalies, distant mental interactions on living systems, instrumental transcommunication. His research has been presented at various conferences, and he's been published in the Journal of Scientific Exploration. The website is winbridge.org. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
And it's our pleasure. Sorry that Julie can't make it to join us this evening, and I'm sure all of our listeners join with us in hoping that she has a speedy recovery. So I don't know if I ever asked you this. You know, I know that Julie had a life event, you know, that triggered her interest in the survival hypothesis, but I don't know that I ever asked you, you know, if you had a personal loss or an experience that spurred your interest in these things.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, most people don't ask me that question. The short version is that I've always been fascinated by parapsychology in general, clairvoyance, precognition, telepathy, mind-matter interaction, and the study of those topics. And when I was younger, I just read everything I could get my hands on, every popular book I could find, every television show, every movie I could watch. Then I started reading journal articles when I got a little bit older. And then when I started to think about college, I was thinking, wow, maybe I could go into parapsychology as a field. And then I realized that you probably needed a PhD and advanced degrees and access to a lab and sophisticated equipment. And again, this is back in the early 80s. The world has changed a lot since then, but So I said, well, you know, I'm a clever guy, but I don't know that I have the wherewithal to withstand a PhD program. So I wimped out and went to computer science. And so I did that. And I worked in that field for a long time. But I always kept my interest in parapsychology. And it was probably in the late 90s that I decided I wanted to start doing something more along the lines of parapsychology or parapsychology research. And again, I started looking into it, and I realized that to do detailed studies of things like telepathy and clairvoyance and psychokinesis and all that kind of stuff, you needed a laboratory space, you needed research participants, and some specialized equipment and other things. And I was like, wow, that's a really high bar of entry. And so then I discovered paranormal investigation and survival research. And I said, well, all I really need to do to get started in this is to find some haunted locations or locations that have some good haunt stories about them and start collecting qualitative data or quantitative data and see where that leads me. And in 1999, I started formally going ghost hunting, for lack of, I'm using air quotes around ghost hunting. Mm-hmm. And I've been sort of hooked on that ever since. But I never really lost my interest in general parapsychology. And then it was in 2005, I was invited, or I, sorry, I intended, I, I, attended the Parapsychology Summer Study Program, which was put on by the Rhine Research Center and the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And I met Julie there, and we were the only kind of couple of people that were interested in survival in general. She was doing this mediumship stuff, and I was doing EVP and ITC and ghost investigation. And we said, wow, there's probably some overlap there we should be talking about, since we're some of the few people that are actually actively interested in this topic. And anyway, one thing led to another, and a couple of years later, I'm in Arizona, and a few years after that, we're doing mediumship research at the Winbridge Institute. So that's the story.
So that, you know, I mean, well, that was kismet, you know. So let me ask you this, and I guarantee you, you haven't been asked this before. And I, so what, obviously, you had, as you described, some great common interest with Julie, and you started a personal relationship. So if one of you was a total skeptic when it came to paranormal phenomena, do you think that the relationship still would have worked?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Clearly, she was at this conference as well, so we both had an interest in this topic, and she was studying it. But I don't know. You know, that's tough to say, right? You know, that has a lot to do with the stars aligning and all the rest of that stuff. But
I have a feeling it would have. So we mentioned, you know, it seems like your dreams have come true. I mean, early on, you realized that you needed, you know, research participants, and you needed a lab, and you have all these things now. So for those who still may be unfamiliar with Winbridge, just give us a little synopsis of who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, in 2008, Julie and I co-founded the Winbridge Institute. Julie was just finishing up her work at the University of Arizona, and she was studying mediumship there, and her research grant ended. And I was doing my own research also at the university and at a lab. And we were trying to figure out what Julie's next steps would be. And we started looking at funding options and some other things. And it really just sort of became very obvious to us that in order for Julie to continue to do the kinds of research that she wanted to do at the level she wanted to do it, we probably needed to create our own platform and organization to do that. So we kind of pulled what little money we could pull together from the change in the couch, and we launched the Winbridge Institute. And it was very well received out of the gate. We have a pretty broad mission. We're interested in you know, how the connection between all of us can help serve all living things. You know, so that's not very narrow. Anyway, so we cover a lot of ground. But really, we were very lucky, and we received a lot of support from the parapsychology community. Julie was very well known for the level of her work and the rigor of her research and her published papers at that point. And we were able to get some funding out of the gate for some research. And we started a little research team, and we've been going pretty strong ever since. So that's been 2008.
You have. And you know, many people may be familiar with the mediumship research, which we'll touch on in a bit, but you're doing so many other things. So I know you don't get much sleep and you drink a lot of coffee, but the one thing that is really interesting, one of your new projects. I mean, people, they hear data, it's pretty dry, right? And you've got a new project that's focusing on the aesthetics of the data. And that may seem to be a contradiction in terms. I mean, how is data aesthetically pleasing? But so tell us a little bit about Psi Art.
Sure. Well, it's a project I'm really excited about, actually. The project sort of started, I've been working on a number of research projects dealing with invited discarnates, where we invite dead people to come into the laboratory and interact with different kinds of equipment. And I ended up with a lot of data after these sessions, and we can And we can look in the data statistically and you get graphs and numbers and p-values and blah, blah, blah. But I was wondering if there was more a more detailed way we could look at the data because, for example, the sessions run over time and we use multiple pieces of equipment. So we actually have three-dimensional data, right? So we have magnitude and time and position. And I was wondering if there's a way we could start looking at those data visually so that we might discover some underlying patterns or some other unknown aspects of the data or the process that just looking at the raw numbers wouldn't give us. And so this is all part of data visualization. So I took these big data sets that we had from these different pieces of equipment and I started turning them into pictures, basically assigning colors and shapes and position in 3D space. And I realized that while I was seeing some patterns, they were just really pretty. And I know that sounds a little like not very scientific, but one of our goals at the Winbridge Institute is to make people's lives a little bit better every day. And I think that art can do that. And aesthetic expression is one of those things that can help people. So as I started to visualize these data, I started, to be honest, it was very straightforward visualizations. And then I started tweaking it a little bit so that they became a bit prettier. And I started posting some of the results on Facebook, and feedback was kind of amazing. People were really taken by the colors and the structures and what they were seeing in the art. And so I decided to, and Julie and I talked about it, and we decided to make it available as a service. So if people wanted to have a session with us where they could sit quietly and think about their deceased person and then invite their deceased person to come and interact with the equipment in our lab and be open to the experience and think about the experience, we could take the data that resulted, visualize it, send it to them, and then they could have sort of a memento of that experience. So that's sort of SciArt in a nutshell.
So you were, when you were taking the data and you first started to make these photographs, for lack of a better term, I mean, it wasn't data from many discarnates, and it wasn't like collective data. It was data like from one particular invited dead person that would, per photo.
Well, I ran a whole bunch of sessions with this particular experiment. And so some of them were with individual discarnates asked to do specific tasks. Some of them were with groups of discarnates who were asked just to kind of hang around the space and see what would happen, and groups of discarnates that were asked, again, to do specific tasks. And then we had control periods and things like that. So it was a very, during the data collection process, it was very structured. The data was actually collected under double-blind conditions. We had active and control periods and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So we looked at it in a bunch of different ways. So when I was first putting this together, I was just using those data sets. But since then, I've been working with specific discarnates, interacting with specific pieces of equipment at specific times.
So you may have invented a way in which loved ones on the other side can participate in art for their loved ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't like to stretch it that far, to be completely honest. I mean, as we know, there's a lot of alternative explanations. We can't ever confirm or deny that discarnates are actively or not actively or passively interacting with these devices. There's no way to determine that currently. So I don't want to say that. So, but what I will say is that, we'll collect these data while this intention period is going on. And then you end up with a nice, hopefully aesthetically pleasing image of that experience that you can print out or you can have it framed. We have a service where we upload the picture and you can have it printed on a canvas print or a metal print or whatever you want to do. And all that information's at sciart.net. Excuse me.
You're right. And it can also reach find out more by linking to Winbridge, you know, winbridge.org. I know that Winbridge is very interested in the effects that mediumship can have on one's grief. If you're mourning, you know, the loss of a loved one, and you embarked the last time you were on. I know that we talked a little bit about the BAM study. So, just give us a refresher what it is and where you stand right now.
Sure. So the BAM, or a Bereavement and Mediumship Study, is a study that Julie designed, and it's really meant to be a very detailed, it's basically a clinical trial to see if we can determine the effect of a mediumship reading on people who are grieving. And a lot of information about the study can be found at afterlifescience.com. And there's a video there where Julie describes the study in some detail. And we've been crowdfunding for this study. We tried to go through some normal channels to get funding for the project. And we had very little success. It turns out not many people are interested in funding this kind of clinical research. So we decided to take it to the people, and we started a crowdfunding campaign. And so far, we've raised a fair amount of money for it. Our goal for this project was $35,000, which is actually not that much money to run a research project on. And as of today, we've raised a little over $12,000, which is kind of amazing. And I'm so happy for, you know, we're thankful for all the people that have donated. So at this point, we've used the funds that we've raised so far, and we've laid the whole groundwork out for the study. So we have the participants are lined up, and we have all of our consenting information is ready, and the online data collection databases are ready to go. And we're basically ready to pull the trigger to start data collection. But I don't want to start, once we start data collection, we kind of have to keep it rolling. And I kind of need some dedicated funds in hand. If you haven't noticed, I'm kind of the operations guy. So I'm always sort of looking at, like, how do we keep research moving forward?
Right.
You know, Julie's the director of research. So, and so what we're really trying to do right now is to raise another block of funds, another chunk of funds, hopefully up to $10,000, which would allow us to keep data collection, start and complete the data collection over the next year. And then once we get those funds, once we get the data collection done, we can focus on analysis and publication. Mm. So it's a really very exciting study, and I would encourage people who are interested in trying to support this kind of work to visit afterlifescience.com and listen to Julie's video and description of the project. And we have expert opinions. It's not just something we just made up and went, this will be a good study, and we just decided to throw it up on the internet. You know, we did all of our legwork on this, and we did all of our homework on it, and it's a very solid study, and I'm really proud of it, actually. And I actually think this is one of the most important studies that we've tried to do to date. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff with mediumship accuracy and phenomenology and physiology. We have another physiology study going on right now where we're looking at actually the hematological changes that take place in a medium after a reading. But really, what it comes down to is, how can we help people? If we want sort of the outside world or the mainstream world to take mediumship and its potential benefits to people seriously, we need some hard data. And the BAM study is a really good way to start laying the groundwork for larger studies and really showing people that there's really a there, that there's something meaningful that happens and healing that happens to people during a mediumship reading.
Well, it's certainly important work. And listen, it's the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research, and you're always looking for ways in which, you know, the research that you're doing can benefit mankind, and that's a perfect example. So I applaud you for that study, and I hope that the research funds will flow and you'll be able to get well on your way on that. We're going to go to a short break. We come back, we'll be talking more with, there's a lot more to talk about. We can't not leave Mark without talking a little bit about ghosts and apparitions. So stay tuned, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Mark Bocuzzi. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found at starseedgems.com. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation updates. I want to remind everybody that they can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny. When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our website, and if you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Red Envelope, Best Western, Expedia, how about J. Crew and the Marriott, Mattel, TurboTax, and Zales. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our annual grief retreat last week was a huge success, and we thank all of our facilitators and our volunteers for their time and expertise in making this the best retreat ever. We also thank all of those who came out to hear Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti deliver a wonderful, logical, and complete presentation on evidence of an afterlife this past Tuesday. We hope that Dr. Parisetti will take some much-deserved time for himself following his return to Glasgow, and we hope to have him back again. If you missed his presentation at either Long Island University or at the Grief Retreat, please visit his website, drparisetti.com, where you can learn about his downloadable programs. And our Spirit Sunday is set for September 14th this year, featuring Lynn LeClaire and Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, two of our certified mediums, with a wonderful Italian dinner at Pomodorino's in Huntington, New York. And lastly, the wait is over. Plan to get yourself to Durham, North Carolina for the biggest and best afterlife conference ever. This is a convention of the top organizations, including Winbridge, that have been dedicated to the investigation of life beyond this physical life. From November 6th through the 11th, we have loads of special things planned, including a day at the Rhine Research Center with a spoon-bending party. So visit our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and make your reservations now. This will be a big one, and you don't want to miss out on all the pomp and circumstance. Back to you.
And we're back with Mark Rapuzzi. And as Fran mentioned, this conference we're having is honoring many of the organizations that have been doing this type of work for quite a long time. And we are honored that Julie Beischel will be presenting, representing Winbridge, and along with her colleagues representing Rhine Research Center and the Division of Perceptual Studies and the British Society for Psychical Research and several others. So that is, don't miss that. More details coming, but that's in Durham, North Carolina. So, Mark, we mentioned at the top in the intro, I mean, you have a long history that goes back to probably your adolescence when you had an interest in ghosts and hauntings, and you've done quite extensive work in field investigations and in lab work. So you'd be perfect one to ask for this. So people have visions. They've had visions reported for centuries of deceased loved ones. And if anybody has had a vision, they'll tell you that they had a visit. And other people might see an apparition that they don't recognize, and they say they saw a ghost. Is it the same thing? Is the term ghost the same thing as a visit from a loved one?
Well, yeah, this gets sticky. Terminology in these areas gets pretty messy pretty quickly, depending on who you're talking to. So there's this idea of after-death communications and visitations. But a ghost, and those tend to be sort of one-off sort of deals. Like, so people may have a visitation from a deceased loved one, and then that doesn't happen again. And then there's this idea that people continue to get visitations or places are haunted by what appear to be deceased individuals. So, yeah, I would put those in two different categories, potentially, because when you talk about a haunting, there's multiple potential reasons or explanations for the kinds of phenomena that's being reported there. And some of those may be related to some aspect of a survived personality, and some of them may not. So there could be living agent psi involved. There's this idea of place memory. So it gets pretty mucky pretty quickly. And so there's no, in my book, there's really very few easy answers to things. Things tend to be a lot more jumbled and messy than we like to think that they are in reality. Even this idea of like precognition and telepathy and clairvoyance, we talk about them as separate things, but really we just kind of live in this big jumble of non-local soup, I guess. Right. And we talk about them for convenience, but ultimately it's there may be just variations on the same theme.
Yeah, well, we all like to put labels on things, and you know, it's very hard to make up these terms when it's based upon principles and energy and forces that we're not familiar with.
I guess
you're right. Sometimes we get into trouble when we start labeling things as this or that. You know what I wanted to ask you? I mean, you and Julie have done so much extensive work with mediums and certified research mediums, and they participate in your varied research projects. Have you noticed that many mediums seem to develop health issues probably at a higher rate of frequency than the general public? Is that true?
Well, in our sample, yes. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Julie did a survey about this with our population, and it seems that mediums do tend to have higher instances of certain kinds of health issues than what we'd expect in the general public. Yeah. And that's actually one of the reasons that we're looking at this hematology study that mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier to see if there's any health-related effects.
Mm. Any speculation as to, I know it would be pure speculation as to why that might be?
Well, yeah, purely speculative. And, you know, again, this is Julie's area of research. She's the pharmacologist and toxicologist. So I don't like to put words in her mouth. But, you know, the idea would be that the body may be getting confused about what is the medium's sort of energetic, physiological body, and when they talk to discarnates, for example, the body may be getting confused between itself and then the outside personality that the medium's contacting. So I think she's going to talk more about this. You know, we just launched this book, From the Mouths of Mediums.
Yeah.
And Julie interviewed 13 laboratory tested mediums to talk about their experiences with communication and give suggestions for people about how they can get communication on their own. And it's a series. So the first one deals with communication, but I think these are going to be some of the other questions that Julie's going to pose to the medium specifically over the course of these next few volumes. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and Mark is referring to three ebooks that Julie has written and Winbridge has put out, Among Mediums, Meaningful Messages, and the latest one, From the Mouth of Mediums. So you can also link to those both on our website or on the Winbridge website. So you can check that out as well. So you have, when we talk about survival evidence, we know that a great deal of it is based upon, you know, anecdotal reports, simply because survival doesn't really lend itself to laboratory study. And then you have Winbridge, one of the few research facilities that left that really conducts laboratory research. So, and again, this is just a personal opinion I'm asking for, but when it comes to convincing the general public, what do you think holds more weight? I mean, evidence produced in a laboratory or these anecdotal reports?
I think it depends on the audience, to be honest. Some people, are very data driven, and so the work that we do is the empirical research that we do and publish is important because it lays the groundwork for people that are really interested in the numbers and the scientific way of knowing and applying the scientific process to answer certain questions. But the reality is that science can't answer every question. And there's this experiential part, which will definitely speak to other people in the population. P-values and research methods, I mean, they don't mean anything to certain people, right? And these are highly debated topics, right? We have, right now in just society in general, we debate everything, the science behind global warming, for example, right? Like, that's a fairly quote-unquote mainstream area of research that's highly contested amongst the public. And even things like evolution, there are groups of people that won't accept evolution as a hypothesis. So you start trying to convince people of survival, it gets pretty tough. And clearly there's a lot of people that have very strong opinions about it already. So, I mean, you're going up against a lot of social norms, you're going up against religious beliefs. It's a tough sell to the, again, I use air quotes a lot, to the non-believer. And my experience is that a lot of people aren't really sitting on the fence on a lot of these topics, but the empirical research is important again because it does provide a scientific framework for at least having the conversation about the possibility of survival and the nature of consciousness.
Right, I agree with that. You know, I know we're coming to the end of our time, but I'm always following your work, especially I'm amazed, someone like myself who has trouble figuring out how to use an iPhone, and I'm looking at all of the emerging technologies that you use, at Winbridge, and you're always tinkering with different types of devices developing different technologies for researching non-physical phenomena. So I can't help but think that you're going to be on the cusp of allowing current day researchers to discover, what the scientists of yesteryear couldn't accomplish. Do you think that those devices are going to lead the way at some point?
I like to think so. I mean, we have a number of things in the works. Most of my technology work deals with instrumental transcommunication, so the ability to use technology to interact with deceased or non-corporeal entities. It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of competing theories and a lot of philosophical issues to get by. But yeah, I like to think that some of the technologies that we're working on now will set the framework for some standardized protocols and will allow us to look at some of these topics in really detailed ways. Okay. You know, we kind of did that with some of our... Oh, sorry.
I'm getting the signal. I appreciate you coming on with us. We have a lot more to talk about. I hope you'll come on again. And the best wishes to Julie, and thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you both very, very much. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Anne Hutchinson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Miriam Pierzga, Julie Beischel, Christina Di Donato, Barbara Petillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, Mark Barron, Vicki Steffi, Tim Donahue, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Rita Dwyer, Eddie Roll, Karen, Andrea, Nina, Diane G., Karen, Lauren, Barbara Ehrlichman, Brian, Doug Berry, Bobby Allison, Gina DiDonato, Phil V, Tom Donahue, Barbara Russell, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafada, Patty Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mullen, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, and David Millo. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
a loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.